the definition of go find your game. And you know what? He's had a couple of assists in the outfield. Like, his arm has been on display to an extent. You know, he's never going to win any Gold Gloves, but if he can defend at like an average level and hit, you're money. Here's Steve Phillips, our TSN 1050 Jays reporter.
How you doing, Steve?
I'm doing great. Good to be with you guys.
We were just talking about the perfect trip to the minors. Is that working on your game, or is that missing the planes and the food, and you want to get your ass back on the plane and eat the food?
You know, it's interesting. I wrote about him a little bit last week in my column for .ca, the player development staff deserves a ton of credit because they got a guy coming back who was mentally and emotionally and spiritually kind of broken. You think about, right, he had the yips in the infield. He couldn't make the throw to second base. It was affecting his offense. I think he was hitting like 125. And everything that could go wrong was going wrong. But they put it back together again. And I got to tell you, the move to the outfield may be exactly the thing that's helping the bat. That the throwing and the defense in the infield may have been weighing on him from some period of time. And affecting the offense. When you start to get so consumed and obsessed by failure or things that you can't do that you're not doing, it can impact the other components of your game. And he seems so relaxed at the plate right now. You know, he had a streak last year. I think he had about 8 or 9 consecutive multi-hit games and was on a great run. And he showed flashes, but we're really seeing a guy that could be a corner player, right? That was my question last week, is can he sustain this level of offense to be a corner outfielder, which means, you know, you're not just the guy that hits for average. You've got to have some impact. You've got to be as part of a championship team. You've got to be a run producer. And he's looking like that right now. And obviously the great pedigree, the family, obviously brother Yuli Gurriel with the Astros, his father was an absolute superstar in Cuba, and is Mr. Baseball down there. He's been commissioner of the league. He's been manager of the year. He's been an MVP. And so it's in the blood and in the genes. And they've got great hair, too. I mean, the dad's bald, which is amazing. The kids have amazing hair. So they must take after mom with that. But you know what? He's really come into his own and is looking like and developing into an everyday corner outfielder.
Well, that's where I think the excitement is being found here for Blue Jay fans, because you're not going to find it with the standings. They're going to lose a million ball games this year. But Biggio has been a stud since he came up. And you know what Vladdy is, and you know what Vladdy's going to be. We're waiting for Bo Bichette to come up, and when he comes up, I think the expectation is more than likely he hits the ground running, or at some point will round into a very quality bat in the majors. So if you're talking Biggio, Gurriel Jr., Vladdy, Bichette, I mean, that's a four-pack that I think Blue Jays fans are starting to get excited about, and I think they should be very excited about.
Yeah, I think the one thing to think about, look at it this way, that when you're building a team, what you want to do is you want to find a leadoff hitter. You want to find a 3-4 hitter in your lineup. And, you know, you can find the right mold for a 2-hole hitter. It could be your best hitter. You move them up there, let like a guy like Vladdy Jr. hit. But you look for that on-base percentage. But you want the aircraft carrier. You want the run producer in the middle of the lineup. And you're starting to see them get answers about those roles. Like, it's easy to fill the 7-8 hitter, 9 hitter in the lineup. Sometimes it's even easier to fill the 6 hitter, and you can go into free agency and get those guys much less expensive. It's the impact guys, the leadoff hitter, the 2-3-4 hitters that cost money if you're going to have to spend money in the free agent market, or if you're going to have to trade to get them. And so if you can develop those guys and then fill in around them, it's a much more productive and efficient rebuilding process. Now, in addition, they need to sort of get the wave of pitchers up to the speed of the wave of hitters, which they're not really there yet. And that's where I look at this trade deadline, where maybe you package a Stroman and a Giles together, and you can bring in, you know, AAA, Major League, you know, 1-year service time pitchers to sort of get it, you know, coupled with the offensive players that really get this rebuilding process rolling.
With Steve Phillips, our Jays and MLB analyst. So your New York Mets have been in the news a lot recently.
Oh, I've heard.
Yeah, pretty fascinating scenario where the manager's trying to kill a reporter and, you know, one of the stars.
Trying to kill him, though?
Well, he had some, I'm joking.
Oh.
Is this your first time doing radio with me? It's sarcasm. And, you know, Jason Vargas jumps in. But then on top of that, I think a more interesting topic of discussion that I think probably applies up here in Toronto is this report out of, I think it was the New York Post, that Brody Van Wagenen, the new GM, who was an agent 6 months ago, is calling up Mickey Callaway, the manager, during the game and telling him when to make a pitching change. What do you make of that report?
Right. So here's what I believe they're talking about. Is on June 1st, Jacob DeGrom was pitching in Arizona, and Brody Van Wagenen, the general manager, was at his home in Connecticut watching the game on TV, and he noticed DeGrom sort of favoring his hip, his side a little bit. He then called the clubhouse to get information about what was going on with DeGrom. Now, you know, what happened from there with the information, what he heard and what he said, we don't really know. Now, he has denied telling Mickey Callaway what moves to make. And I will tell you that if it had been me and I was not on the road trip and I saw my pitcher, my ace, laboring, and it has nothing to do with the fact that I was his agent at one point, but if I'm the GM, I'm going to call. What I would have done is I would have called our clubhouse guy that's traveling with the team. I would have said, listen, shoot down to the dugout and find out from our head trainer what's going on with DeGrom and let me know what's happening. And the reason I'd want to know that is because if there is something significant going, it's my job now to figure out what happens if. What happens if we need to put him on the injured list? And I would then have to alert the AAA team about what's going on and talk to my staff about who the potential replacement would be, just getting all that in order. And so that information is important for a general manager. Now, I got to tell you, he denied, you know, telling to make in-game moves, and I tend to believe him. I believe that they were talking about this issue with DeGrom where he did call, and I would have called too. Every general manager of baseball, if they were home watching, would call somebody to try to find out what's going on. So I don't think it's as dramatic as they want, and I think because of the conflict of interest, because it's the Mets, and here's the thing with the Mets, and I did it too, and I don't know why, but I could look at that big pile of doo-doo in the sidewalk in front of me, and I always stepped in it. And it seems like the Mets executives always seem to step in it still, and it's hard to know, but there's always something going on in New York. Now, here, when I was the executive, it drove me crazy. In the media, I think it's the greatest gift ever that is the New York Mets.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like, it's because the Yankees are just going to keep cruising. You know, they're just going to keep winning, and they're attractive from a media perspective because of the scope, the amount of people that are obviously fans, and they're probably going to make a couple of trades. But scandal, dysfunction, I mean, that's page six, man. That's what you're looking for. And the Mets, to your point, Steve, they always seem to supply it.
Yeah, they do. Now, and they, here's the thing. Like, they really have a lot of, I think, good things going on. A lot of good things going on within the bad stuff going on. Like, Pete Alonso, the first baseman, is a star. I mean, he's a star. I'd lock him up for as many years as you can lock him up. He's a humble superstar who cares, who plays to the crowd. He's got a great personality. He's got leadership skills for being a rookie. Jeff McNeil's hitting like 340 for them. Can play a little infield, some outfield, a really solid player. Michael Conforto's legit. And DeGrom. Now, the rest of it's kind of a mess, and they can't seem to get any level of consistency, and they have had big expectations, and they've got some dysfunction, you know, from the ownership level down to the front office, and they've got sort of a different structure and philosophy that they have in place that sort of gets in the way. But there are some good things there. They just can't seem to get any momentum in a really tough division with a lot of talented teams.
Steve, how would you feel if you're managing the Rays or the manager of the Rays and the owner came to you and said, might be a possibility that half the games might be up in Montreal? Wouldn't you think that was kind of nutso?
I would say, comme si, comme ça. I would have issues with it. I mean, there's so many different things.
Oh,
that
yeah.
Are
we were talking earlier, like kids in school, like simple stuff like that.
Yeah.
You can't
right.
do it.
Like, what do you, free agents, you know, to get a free agent to come to your team, you know, they travel with their wives when they come in and meet with you. And can you imagine the conversation? We're like, look, here, what's going to be great? You're going to spend a few months here in Florida, then you're going to move your family up to Montreal. And yes, you're going to have two homes. You're going to have one place in Montreal, one place in Florida. And, you know, schools, well, maybe you can sort of work, you know, schools, so finish 1 year and start in that year in another school. And so, I mean, it's really complicated. The other part in this is that think about this. Building a stadium without a dome is 30% less expensive than one with a dome. So you save 30% on the overall construction price for a non-dome stadium versus a dome stadium. But what they're asking in Tampa is they want them to build a stadium that costs 30% less than the dome one, but you only get half the games. So why do I want to pay 70% of the dome stadium to get 50% of the games instead of building an entire stadium with a dome and getting 100% of the games? The math doesn't add up. And the mayor in St. Petersburg is like, yeah, that doesn't work for us. We're not in on a part-time basis on this. And if they want to have any sort of real conversation, they've got to come back and mend the relationship. Here's the thing. They're not going to have a stadium in Tampa. And I think this whole plan was an idea to transition to, you know, hopefully play some games in Montreal, some games in Tampa, with the idea that in 2028, their lease is up after 2027. In 2028, they'll move full-time to Montreal. But it just, the split two-city team doesn't work.
No. Doesn't work, won't work. But they're exploring it.
Yes.
There's an exploration happening right now. Very important stuff. Great stuff, Steve, as always, buddy. We'll do it again soon.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
There's Steve Phillips, our Jays and MLB analyst.